You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and insightful daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and refined product markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the U.S. energy landscape.
Friday, February 6, 2026. Happy together? Natural gas and electric power more intertwined than ever? NPC sounds the alarm. Published by Housley Carr. There's more interest than ever in increasing coordination between the U.S. natural gas and electric power sectors. Each market now depends more heavily on the other than at any point in the past. Yet significant hurdles remain, many stemming from fragmented and distinct regulatory regimes, long-standing, fundamentally different physics and economic models, and deeply entrenched operating practices on both sides. In today's RBN blog, we'll continue our examination of gas-electric coordination by assessing the National Petroleum Council's, NPC, recent recommendations and considering what could come next. In part one of this series, we provided an overview of the NPC's December report, Reliable Energy, Delivering on the Promise of Gas-Electric Coordination, which was prepared at the request of Energy Secretary Chris Wright. Among other things, the report highlighted the reliability and resilience-related risks associated with the increasing interdependence of gas and electric markets amid surging electricity demand. It also discussed the misalignment of these markets and the need to facilitate the build-out of new gas and electric infrastructure. Finally, the NPC made a series of recommendations aimed at improving gas-electric coordination. Today, we will zero in on what we see as the primary issues/challenges, and look at how we think this all may play out. In part 1, we discussed a few of the NPC's specific recommendations. This time, we will be looking more deeply into the underlying issues that have complicated the relationship between the gas and electric sectors for the past few decades, and made it difficult, but not always impossible, for the two sides to agree on operational and other changes that might enhance gas-electric coordination. Market model misalignment. The most important reality to acknowledge up front is that natural gas and electric power markets operate under different and distinct models. Electric utilities, including the distribution companies that sit between unregulated generators and end users, operate within a specified service territory and have an obligation to serve customers within it. In exchange for their commitment to provide this universal service, electric utilities are granted monopoly rights within their territory and are authorized by state regulators to recover prudently incurred costs and earn an approved rate of return on equity, ROE, on those investments. This service obligation model also applies to local gas distribution utilities. Electric utilities' obligation to serve doesn't hinge on whether the utility owns generation. Even in regions with lots of competitive supply, the load-serving entity still has to make sure customers have electricity either by self-supplying from utility generation, contracting with others, or buying from independent power producers, IPPs, through wholesale markets, because the duty to serve runs to the retail customer and the reliability of service. As a result of this overarching duty, investments made in transmission and distribution wires tend to be socialized or spread over the entire customer base as they are made. Midstream companies that develop, own, and run the interstate pipelines that transport vast volumes of gas to electric utilities, IPPs, and gas distribution companies operate under an entirely different construct. Midstreamers are on-request service providers. Their core role is to transport gas to their customers under individual contracts that are governed by tariffs, i.e., terms and rates, determined to be just and reasonable by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. Note, even discounted and negotiated rates are subject to FERC oversight. Put another way, pipelines act simply as contract vendors to their customers, with their mix of capital facilities, pipelines and storage, and service offerings based on what their customers want and are willing to pay for. That's not to say gas pipelines don't have public responsibilities. They are required to operate safely, to stick to rates acceptable to FERC, and, barring a force majeure event, to fulfill their contractual obligations to their customers. But it's not their responsibility to make sure that everyone, whether it be a power generator or a homeowner with gas heat, gets as much gas as they may need on, say, a bitterly cold day in February. That's the misalignment recognized at the heart of the NPC's report, namely that power markets increasingly rely on gas-fired generation for reliability, but the commercial/regulatory frameworks for gas supply and transportation don't always line up with the capacity, speed, volatility, and must-serve expectations that electricity providers have to contend with. This is especially true in pipeline capacity-constrained parts of the U.S. during extreme weather, such as late January's Winter Storm Fern and other extended polar vortex events when gas demand for space heating is maxing out and electric utilities are scrambling to find enough power to keep up with customers' needs. At the same time, Pipeline operators are dealing with shipper nominations, contract rights, and operational limits that represent a difficult balancing act across their customer populations, frequently involving consumers in multiple, very different regions of the nation. The need for stability and balance in operating the pipelines means they frequently collide with the substantial swings in power requirements as electric utilities follow their public service obligations to keep the lights on. Lack of incentives for FT service. A second key issue regarding gas-electric coordination is the incentives, or lack thereof, for some power generators to contract for firm transportation, FT, service for gas supply. This is where the contract vendor role of pipelines puts pressure on power generators and their market managers, regional transmission organizations, RTOs, and independent system operators, ISOs, to commit to the capacity they need to ensure reliability. Fundamentally, if there's not enough pipeline capacity built and contractually committed to generators, rules that try to match power volatility without endangering gas utilities' heating customers are just carving up the last can of sardines in a lifeboat. Old-school, vertically integrated electric utilities are generally encouraged to sign FT deals to ensure they will have sufficient gas for the plants they would need to operate during periods of very high electricity demand. That makes sense, in that utilities have the obligation to serve we discussed above. However, in competitive generation markets, IPPs whose plants run only some of the time, depending on economic dispatch by an RTO or ISO, would understandably seek to minimize their fixed costs and be disinclined to pay the much higher and constant cost of super-dependable FT service. Instead, they sometimes rely on low-cost, interruptible transportation, IT, arrangements that provide them with the gas they need most of the time, but sometimes not when their power is needed most. See Part 1 for much more on this. IT is much less expensive than FT, primarily because you only pay if you use it, and don't need to make a large fixed payment every month whether you need it or not. But it's that monthly revenue from long-term FT contracts that underpins the development of gas pipeline capacity. Sure, there are a few things pipelines and power generators can do to help mitigate gas supply squeezes, such as preemptive line packing, pushing extra gas into pipelines in advance of anticipated high demand periods, to help sustain deliveries. Also, many gas plants in regions susceptible to gas supply challenges are dual-fuel facilities capable of switching to diesel, stored on-site. Others produce and store LNG for backup use. However, for gas to fulfill its promise to support the current growth in power generation, more than that will be needed. No single entity owns the coordination issues. There's a third matter too, namely the fact that there is no centralized, unified governance of U.S. gas and electric markets. Most important, there is FERC, which it's fair to say comes the closest to national oversight under uniform rules. It regulates interstate gas pipelines, interstate electric transmission, and the RTOs and ISOs that manage that transmission. However, it has its limits. As we saw in Winter Storm Uri, FERC does not regulate either interstate gas pipelines or, in the case of Texas, ERCOT. Beyond FERC, though, there are quite a few cooks in the kitchen. State regulatory commissions, which set the rules in each state for how utilities manage their business and what they can build in the way of generation. The National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners, NAUC, which represents those state regulators and allows them to coordinate their oversight of retail power markets and local gas utilities. The North American Electric Reliability Corporation, NERC, which works with owners, operators, and consumers, as well as federal, state, and provincial regulators across North America, to develop and enforce mandatory reliability standards. And then there are the helpers without any mandatory authority, the North American Energy Standards Board, NASB, which develops gas and electric business standards but can't enforce them unless FERC adopts them. And finally, the NPC, which advises the Secretary of Energy on natural gas and other energy issues. Coming back to FERC, it has already played a lead role in enhancing coordination. Often building on business practice standards initially developed by NASB, FERC has issued a number of orders that ratcheted up gas-electric coordination, mostly by having each sector share more information with the other about what they're up to. For example, in Order 760 in 2012, FERC directed RTOs and ISOs to routinely provide automated feeds of market and operational data to electronic bulletin boards, EBBs. The following year, in Order 787, the Commission authorized RTOs, ISOs, and gas pipelines to privately share non-public operational information such as planned outages, flow constraints, and gas supply status, all to promote grid reliability and operational planning, without creating unacceptable commercial consequences. In Order 809 in 2015, FERC revised the timeline for gas pipeline nominations so generators can more efficiently secure their gas needs for the hours just ahead. All of this has helped, of course, but shortfalls in gas-electric coordination remain evident and still need to be addressed. As we said in Part 1, Winter Storm Uri in 2021 and Winter Storm Elliott in 2022 exposed different but related vulnerabilities. During Uri, extreme cold weather froze up power plants, forcing ERCOT, the grid operator in most of Texas, to order rotating outages of electricity to customers, including natural gas wellheads and gas gathering and processing facilities, causing outages to spiral. Similarly, during Elliott, freezing equipment and mechanical/electrical issues led to reliability lapses, and system operators narrowly avoided catastrophic gas service loss. Just last month, Winter Storm Fern caused far fewer problems. Coal-fired generation ramped up, accounting for 21% of lower 48 generation the week ending January 25, up from 17% the previous week, and several dual-fuel plants in New England and elsewhere switched to diesel. ERCOT said its grid faced no serious issues. Two other matters have come to the fore as well. First, renewables now play a much greater role in the electric sector, and gas-fired plants are called on routinely to ramp their output up or down to offset highly variable wind and solar production. This means that generators and the pipelines that serve them, which are dependent on some level of stability, have to contend with a new and unprecedented source of load volatility. Also, there's a massive effort underway to develop new gas-fired generation to power a slew of planned AI data centers. If even a fraction of the new power plants being planned come online, existing gas pipeline networks will be under increasing strain. So, how might this play out? Gas and electric markets have coordination issues both in the construction and funding of sufficient pipeline capacity and in the operating practices on a day-to-day basis. As we said earlier, the market model misalignment between the gas and electric sectors, their different regulatory constructs and other factors have made it darn near impossible over the past couple of decades for the two sides to agree on life-changing advances in gas-electric coordination. Hey, if it were easy, it would have happened by now, right? The surest way to guarantee there is sufficient gas pipeline capacity to supply all gas-fired generators during periods of high power demand would be to add more pipeline capacity. In particular, the NPC report called for many more fit-for-purpose facilities, not just regular point-to-point pipeline capacity, but facilities capable of managing large fluctuations in demand in real time. But most plant owners, particularly non-utility IPPs, don't want to commit to long-term FT contracts for pipeline space or for such special facilities and services that they may only need a few hundred hours a year. And midstreamers are not in the business of making pipeline project investments without a reasonable return. Unlike electric transmission providers, pipeline companies cannot socialize such costs to all customers, both for legal and competitive reasons. The stakes are high here. The gas and electric sectors have never been more interdependent. Electricity has never been more critical to the economy. And the ongoing boom in gas-fired power projects will make the pipeline grid even more stressed than it is today. The looming question is, can FERC launch a meaningful initiative to resolve the various issues? Most importantly, can the role of pipelines as vendors be recognized in such a way that the electric industry can select what it needs and find a way to fund its choices? And can the way be cleared for pipeline companies to build what is required per the electric requests in time to avoid problems? FERC has made dramatic moves like that in the past, such as with Order 636 and the order's predecessor notices of proposed rulemaking, NOPRIS, way back in the early 1990s. In that landmark order, the Commission directed pipelines to unbundle, i.e., separate, their gas sales and transportation services and provide the latter on an open access, non-discriminatory basis to any qualified shipper. It was a massive change for market participants and got a decidedly mixed reaction, at least initially, but it completed the transition of gas markets into a truly competitive regime. More recently, FERC's aggressive new rules on electric transmission planning have been similarly dramatic. The prospects for FERC action in the near term may be iffy, though. The Commission was roiled by staff departures in 2025 and has its hands very full. The Commission's new chair, Laura Swett, has acknowledged that morale is low and needs to be turned around. So stay tuned, and keep an eye on the Energy Department and Congress, too. FERC's powers are limited, and federal legislation may be needed to help resolve the gas-electric coordination dilemma once and for all. Happy Together was written by Gary Bonner and Alan Gordon and is the sixth cut on side one of the Turtles' third studio album of the same name. The song was recorded in January 1967 at Sunset Sound in Hollywood, where Turtles' lead vocalist Howard Kalin said he recorded his vocal in one take. It was released as a single in February 1967, where it knocked the Beatles' Penny Lane out of the number one slot on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 singles chart. Turtles bassist Chip Douglas did the arrangement on the song, with Joe Wizard handling the production chores. It remains the biggest hit record for the band to date. Personnel on the recording were Howard Kalin, lead vocals, Mark Volman, vocals, Al Nickel, lead guitar, piano, backing vocals, Jim Tucker, rhythm guitar, backing vocals, Chip Douglas, bass, backing vocals, arrangement, John Barbata, drums, percussion, and Andy Cahan, organ. The single was certified 3X Platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA. The Happy Together LP was recorded between January 1966 and April 1967 at United Western Recorders and Sunset Sound in Hollywood. Produced by Joe Wizard and Bones Howe, it was released in April 1967 and went to number 25 on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart. It has been certified gold by the RIAA. Three singles were released from the LP. The Turtles were an American rock band formed in Westchester, California. Led by vocalists Howard Kalin and Mark Volman, the group started as a surf rock band called the Crossfires in 1965 and changed their name to the Turtles after signing with White Whale Records in Los Angeles. Kalin and Volman later joined Frank Zappa's Mothers, formerly the Mothers of Invention, and also released records of their own as Flo and Eddie. The pair became the go-to guys for background vocals on over 100 albums. T-Rex's hit record Bang a Gong is one of the best-known ones. The Turtles released 5 studio albums, 20 compilation albums, 7 EPs and 26 singles. Their previous group, the Crossfires, released 2 singles and a compilation album. For several years, Kalin and Volman appeared together as the Turtles on the Happy Together tour, which featured various artists from the 1960s. Volman continued fronting the Turtles until shortly before his passing in September 2025 at 78. Guitarist Jim Tucker died in November 2020 at 74 and drummer John Barbata died in March 2024 at 79.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.